So, well, please help welcome Des Trainer.
Is this microphone working? Yeah, wonderful. How's everyone? Hey, woo! Cool. So I'm going to be talking about designing data-driven dashboards and web applications, or infographics for web software. And that's kind of a popular topic in software at the moment because basically design has reached a management level where they actually want to see screens that explain to them how their business is doing. At a very simple level, some people just want a big green light that says everything's okay, go back to bed. But so that's me. I can do that pose if you want. I'm the user experience lead at Contrast. I'm on Twitter as Des Trainer. As user experience lead, that primarily means I work on software projects, making sure that we're delivering stuff that the end user will actually value, appreciate, and hopefully use, engage with, pay a lot of money for. That's the sort of main role. Contrast is a Dublin-based design consultancy. We kind of design and deliver web applications. That's our homepage. But well, actually, that's not our homepage. That's the URL to our homepage. And what I'll be talking today about is this. So this is like a little walkthrough of what we're going to get. I'm going to talk to you about how when you're designing infographics or visualizations, you need to know your audience. Once you know that, you need to know the domain that you're working in. Are you selling books, or are you selling software upgrades, or are you selling car insurance? Then we'll talk about knowing the data, so knowing what the difference between showing a delta is versus showing a single figure versus showing correlation, etc. Then knowing how to visualize this sort of stuff. Knowing how to style it. So when I say visualize, I mean what's a good visual representation, whether it's a bar chart or a graph or an area map. And when I say style it, I mean how do we make it look attractive? And then I'll have some closing thoughts. So we'll kick off with a sort of quick background on visualization. So there are hard things to work with. It's hard to make visuals much better than text, because if you've got $0 in your bank account, no line graph is going to tell you that any better than a big dollar sign zero, right? And oftentimes you'll see like stupid, like a pie chart where it's like, you know, how much of your money is in your current account, and the whole thing is just pink because it's just all of it. And like they're the sort of the low end of visuals. It's hard to make them adaptable, and the reason that's important is because software has to generate them if they're inside a web application. So it's not like you have like DaVinci in the corner sketching out your interface for you. This has to be produced by code. It's definitely hard to make them useful. That's where a lot of people fall short. It's hard to make them easy to read so that at a glance you know what the point is, and it's hard to make them actually communicate anything meaningful. And by meaningful, I mean it's hard to make them so that when someone looks at it, they're like, I know what I should do next. So the take I have on this is it's derived from a guy called Jason Fried, who's the founder of a company called 37 Signals. But he has a lovely quote, which is, be clear first and clever second. And if you have to throw out one of those, throw out clever. And that's really, really quite important when you're trying to do anything in sort of fancy infographic territory. It's the first thing you have to do is make the stuff clear. After that, you worry about the sexy shit. So visuals can confuse. And you need look no further than the beacon of American news that is Fox to get this. Here's a pie chart showing the presidential run. T-shirt for anyone who can spot what's gone wrong here. Now, it is kind of, it's hilarious, but like, if you think of what actually had to happen behind the scenes for this to go out live, right? Somebody had to produce that chart, and it had to get passed along the production team all the way live and air, and at no point someone going, that's three equal spheres, and they total 180%. The whole thing does not make sense, right? Another example would be, say, something like this is a graph, and like the argument they're trying to show, this is a separate news site, is how basically Democrats reduce the deficit and Republicans increase it. But the amount of shit they add onto the chart to try and make that point is ridiculous. Anyone who's ever worked with a tool like MATLAB will be familiar with nonsense like this. This is what you call a three-dimensional stacked multi-layered bar chart, or bullshit, whatever you want to call it. But a great one, actually, is this is from CNN, just to show I don't just pick on Fox. What they're trying to represent here is the tragic oil spill where there's 184 million gallons of oil were spilled. And they thought, well, let's try and visualize what 184 million gallons look like. And you can see what happened. The dude obviously opened his fridge and he's like, that's a gallon. Right, so it's 184 million of them. Let's just draw that. So he starts drawing, he's like, oh, shit. So it just kind of fades out towards the back. So the point being, like, what's really, you know, what's the visual really helping here? The exact same article had this this great piece here. And like, this is one of these ones where you can sort of half see what they're going for. But this was the visualization, right? And you're supposed to join the dots from here. So what you're looking at is Dallas Cowboys Stadium and a 24-ounce can of beer. And then you're thinking, well, what about it? So, well, the what about it is the bit that accompanies it. This is the accompanying text to that graphic, right? And what they end up saying is that, like, if 660 gallons of water across, that's that 660 with 15 zeros, don't forget, it was poured in the Cowboys Stadium, I think the amount of oil spilled would be about the size of a 24-ounce can of beer. So that's 104 million cubic, which is the same as 50 cubic inches, which amounts to a 24-ounce can, and that's the percentage there. Like, what they're actually trying to show you is how small the spill is in the context of the ocean. But when you have to put all this assistive text, you've kind of failed, right? You've totally missed the point. And it's these sort of things that have led to what that people call the anti-infographic movement, which are a set of posters you can buy, right? And the posters all look like this one here on the left. And the idea of the posters is basically, let's have some nice charts, or let's have some data, but like, let's not knacker the two of them together, like, which is what, unfortunately, what all these graphics are doing. So you can buy the sexy charts, or you can get data, but you can't do both, is what they're arguing. And a lot of the time, unfortunately, they're right. So how do we avoid this? Well, the approach I take when designing an interface or designing an infographic is pretty much similar. It's, first of all, you have to start with who is going to be looking at this material. And that, once you know that, that kind of drives everything. And so, who is the info for is the big question. And again, I'm saying surprise that the user experience, you're just talking about the users, because obviously that's what I do. But when I say who, I consider two things. I consider the role, and then I consider the level, if you like. So the role, you can be like a CEO, for example, like Mr. Bezos here. So he has a strategic view. He thinks about the long term. You could tell him that Amazon.com is down. He's going to say, okay. He's not going to go and run down the road because it's just not his problem. He's thinking bigger picture. He's thinking about what Kindle 6 is going to look like and where will Amazon be positioned when books are no longer sold in the shops in 2020. Like, that's the sort of stuff that he ponders. So things like, oh, you know what, the girl with the dragon tattoo is sold out. He doesn't give a shit. You know, like, that's, he's beyond that. So what he's interested in is a very, very high-level overview, simple summaries. And, you know, he only really wants to be alarmed if something pretty alarming is happening. Then you have like someone like an analyst. So an analyst is somebody whose job it is to answer questions based on all the data that's available to them. They have queries, they're looking for correlation, they're looking for cause and effect. And these guys, were, you know, in the absence of a good visualization tool, will spend all their time in Excel drawing charts and looking for answers in data. So, for example, they might be told, profits are down, but sales are up. Explain. And it'll be up to their job to say, well, it turns out that we're actually selling more orders, but the average order price has gone down. And the reason it's gone down is because everyone's ordering this thing, which we're underselling to an illusion to attract customers, but it's not working. But like, they find all this out by constant querying of information. And then another type of person who would have to look at infographics is somebody who's in the logistics end of things, somebody whose job it is to keep things alive. For example, there are plenty of guys who are in charge of keeping all of Amazon's sites online. They sit in a NOC center, network operation center, and they're the guys who do get out of bed crying if their phone goes off. Their focus is always going to be issue-driven and event-driven stuff. What's going on? How is it being fixed? What's the progress rate? What time will it be fixed? Is everything else okay? So that's the three roles. So we've got the top level, the sort of analyst, and then your sort of logistics person or your operations person. Now, there are other roles, but I would say for like 9 out of 10 companies I've worked for in this area, this is a good breakdown. Then you've got the department. So what level are they at and what department of the company do they work in? So Your salesperson is usually interested in leads, conversions, the value of the sale. Is all that working out well? Average price versus competitors, whatever. Marketing guys are interested in impressions, loyalty, awareness, market share. And network guys might be interested in issues, tickets, lead time or load time, I guess. Uptime, performance, average page rendering time. That's all the stuff they care about. And they have thresholds that they have to stay above or below in most cases. So when you combine these two, you can get a good vision of what sort of person you're shooting for. So a customer support manager is different to a customer support analyst or a customer support operations person. The customer support manager isn't on the phone directly to customers. His job is the more longitudinal view. Are we beating our competitors for customer care? They're the sort of questions they'll focus on. Can we achieve a 95% customer recommendation? That's his sort of questions. A marketing operations person might be looking at underground, are our campaigns running? Are we meeting our payments? Is our landing page performance sufficient or whatever? That's the sort of concerns they'd have. But it's when you know basically what level of seniority, if you like, in the company where they are and what area they're working in, that's how you can get a good impression of what do they want to know. And this is how you avoid doing one of the 184 billion gallons of oil sort of style things. Show people stuff they want to know. So when you have that, you then have to sort of know, well, when we know that, what's the actual data that's relevant to them? So it's about identifying which of these is kind of important. Is it just the actual dollar signs in sales, or is it the number of individual sales, or is it the number of customers who walked in the door of the shop? Is it the total per month? Is it the average value of a customer? Is it in gaming, there's all sorts of there's a metric called ARPU, which is average revenue per paying user versus average revenue per user. And you have to work out what areas do these guys focus on. So for Facebook, a good level, because Facebook don't actually charge you money to use your site. What they're actually interested in is how often do you log in? What's the gap between logins? How long is a session? When you log in, how far back do you read the news feed? How often do you comment in your friends' posts? How often do you poke people? How often do you get poked? All that sort of stuff. Someone's job it is to make sure. And if you start or stop acting on Facebook, if you stop logging in, or if you log in but do nothing, you'll notice over time the interface changes. It adapts to you to try and entice you back into it. So you might log in one day and it'll be like, you haven't talked to these 11 people in a while. And you're like, well, there's a good reason for that. But what they're trying to do is bring you back in. So once you know which of these figures you're concerned with, you can then get into this area of what way should we represent it? What are we looking for? Are we looking for a trend that's upwards in sales, or are we looking for a trend that's downwards in customer dissatisfaction? So the different types of things you have to communicate is, in all my experience, I've found there's six things that are usually relevant. One of them is to communicate a single figure. And this is never hard. People don't usually get this one too wrong. But this is when there's one number that's really important. You have 3 new males, you have 11 quid in your bank account, you owe 55 quid, your house is worth 7 grand, whatever. Usually these numbers aren't just one figure, though. They always have a state as well. There's usually that's okay, or that's a bad news state, or that's good news state. And then you usually represent them. And then coloring is the best way to do state, or if you want to, you can show it with an approximating sort of up 3 quid since you last were here. So examples of that would be an American airline clerk would have a waiting list, which is just there are 7 people waiting to get on this flight, and and that number will just change. But there's no point in telling a guy who's on the help desk, well, actually, there might be 11 people waiting to get on this flight screaming at you, but if you look at it over the last 4 years, it's actually in a downward trend. He doesn't give a shit. He's the one getting shouted at. So you've got a single figure with context. So this is when it actually does matter. So this is, tell me what's going on, but put it in perspective for me. So this scenario where sparklines can be of some use. So a sparkline is what usually is, it's a very, very small line chart that just basically shows you enough to tell you if there's a trend, i.e. up, down, or flat, or it might show you a spike, but that's about it. So you might say the readers to your blog are 12,000 people, and that's up 0.32%, and that's roughly how it trended over the last 30 days or whatever. So then you've got when you move beyond just showing a single figure, you've got the analysis of a period. So show me all the key moments that happened this month. So for example, it might be something like show me traffic to my website, show me number of sales in the shop, show me revenue in the shop. And the usual thing to do here is like a line chart. And that usually works out well. And I realize it's not rocket science, but basically if you scatter your points and graph it well, choose a clever axis, you'll do well. Where you can go wrong with line charts is when you start drawing curves that imply that you have data that you don't necessarily have. So if you only know 6 data points, or 5 data points in this case, if you have 5 months figures, this is not a good representation of that period, because it looks like, say, we gradually progressed between April and May, but we don't actually know that, because you would believe then you could draw a line here and say, well, on the 15th of April, we were kind of on around 15 grand or so, or whatever it would have been, like 25 grand or so. But if we don't know that, it's not true, so we shouldn't show it. And that's the sort of, you know, it's that sort of extrapolation or interpolation where you sort of try and make data of what you don't have that has our economy in the state it's in. It's like you just take the last 2 dots in the chart, draw a line through. It's like, yeah, well, 2004 was good, 2005 was good. And that's not always the case. That's the exact same data there, right? That's the exact same data. It's a different story, though, because it tells you that we're not telling you things grew or shrank or anything like that. We're just saying, here's exactly what happened. It looks a bit more chaotic, which is what the data is. So another figure you'll usually try and show in a dashboard or in an infographic that shows performance of something is, how is it performing against a target? So you might have a sales target, you might have a customer satisfaction target, or you might have, like, you know, a goals per game target. You know, the context is kind of relevant. And what you're trying to show is, how are we doing against this? So the typical thing to do here is a line chart or 2 line charts. So this could show you your actual performance versus your target for a period. And at a glance, you'd sort of say, well, we're in or around our target. And this is like where people start to abuse the data they have. So when I say abuse the data, what I mean is that line chart looks like we're in or around our target, because it's hard for us to see where we're missing it. What we're talking about here is how far away we are from our target. But what we're showing us is just 2 lines. And the interesting bit of the line, like what we're supposed to be discussing here, is like this gap here as you follow it around. That's the actual thing we're interested in, but that's not what we're showing. We're leaving that up to you to try and visually work out. So you end up eyeballing a chart trying to work something out. If we'd actually look at a gap from a target, that's the same data, right? That's the exact same data, but that shows us how we're hitting our target or missing our target. Now, you might, like, if you were this guy and you went into your boss and you said, here we go, here's my targets, he'd be like, good on you, Johnny, have a bonus. This guy, you wouldn't even bother going. That's the exact same data, right? But this guy's probably getting fired. Because we're showing what percentage is he off of his target, and you realize, well, he's only actually met his target 4 times. Now, well, he's exceeded it, and like maybe I'll credit him that one red one that's just a little bit off. But like most of the time, he's a good chunk off. Same data, different story. So that's why it's important to know, like, rather than just dumping all the shit you have onto a graph and saying, well, they can work it out with their eyes, they can't. It never works out that way. You have to like identify your problem and show that. So another thing people try to do is show a breakdown of a variable. So this is like, typical things like what age groups are buying our stuff, or what countries are we big in. And the most popular thing to do here, and what you'll always be encouraged to do, and every icon and slide and client will say, oh, can we just get a nice pie chart there? And they love them because they're colorful, and they always look like beach balls, and it reminds you of the time back at the beach when you didn't have worries and you didn't have to, sales targets or whatever. But it's like, anyone want to shout out, like, who's number 2 in the chart here? Anyone? Maybe it's UK, is it? Like, if I was asking then, like, what you see people doing with pie charts is, because this is rarely clear enough, right? As in, like, say, if you take the light blue versus the purple or the red, how are they getting on? So, and it's not jumping out at you. So the next thing people do is then go and add the data to the chart, which is usually a good sign that your chart isn't doing your work, is when you're starting to put the data over it anyway. Because, like, then what's the point of the visual, like? If I was to ask you, say, who's in 4th place here, you can tell because you're looking at data right now. But a far simpler way to visualize this would just be that, right? That's the exact same data, whereas now you can just, what is the question that you have? Well, who's doing what? So Ireland, you can see, are at 22% or whatever. But, like, that, like, you know, when you sort a bar chart, it makes things very, very clear for people. It's not, again, it's not shocking, but it's just people prefer this, but this is actually what they want. Oh, an interesting thing about these bar charts, how you categorize these groups kind of lets you tell all sorts of interesting lies if you want. So if you wanted to make a point that the middle class of America are the guys who are, you know, who have all the money, right? You could group them, and what you'd see here is that the guys who are on 100 to 200 grand a year are bringing in 1.4 trillion in the American economy. So the implication being, let's tax them. But what they've been clever here is that they've got this grouping over here of like 10 million plus, right? And you don't realize that 10 million plus is possibly a bigger group than the 100 to 200, but they're trying to hide it a little bit. If we were to explore this just a little bit, if you wanted to say it wasn't the middle class, it was the damn wealthy feckers, that's the exact same data, just regrouped, so that if we say, how about instead of 10 million plus, let's just call it 200K plus. Now no one else is really looking quite so impressive, right? You can easily, like, any point you want to make, you can skew by grouping things whichever way you want. There's a good book in that called How to Lie with Statistics. Steve Jobs does this a little bit. This is his chart here. What you'll notice he did here is that he's put the green heavy segment at the front, despite the fact that the small pink one or purple one behind it is smaller. It's a bigger number, but it's a smaller segment. He achieved that by rotating the pie chart so you see more, because you're seeing the front lip of this, you're seeing a lot more green than you should, right? And because that's further away, you're seeing a lot less purple than you should, okay? It's an easy way to sort of make a point while hiding it. If you look, again, the same data, so Apple look like they're doing pretty good there. They're actually in third place, like, if you were to just go the standard route. Another way you'll see people do this is with these what I call bubble plots. And this is when you see these in newspapers and in Time magazine, unfortunately, has a penchant for them. But what they do is they just draw circles that are supposed to indicate the relative size of things. So if I say if A, B, C, D, and E were pizzas, and you could either have A or every other pizza, which would you pick? Well, yeah, I mean, you might say B, C, D, and E because you want the variety. But obviously, you know I'm teeing you up for this here. A is actually bigger than all of the rest of them put together. People just don't know how to gauge, circles and size. And the reason they don't know that, if I was to ask you even, like, how much bigger is A than B? You might say it's a little bit bigger. It's probably more than twice as big. Because it's very, very hard to tell this sort of stuff. The reason it's hard to tell is because if that was A and that was B, this sort of ring out here, this is the difference between A and B. And if I ask you how big is that, you don't have an answer for me. Because there's nothing in the world that you can compare that to. You can sort of say, well, it looks like a euro, except for if you drilled the middle out. No one has a clue like how to actually visualize these things. Another sort of childish and colorful thing you'll see is these unit plots where it's like, you know, a distribution where a green might represent like first years and blue might represent second years, whatever. And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, well, how many is the green? Well, let's see, it's 8 across times 3 minus 1. You know, you're leaving a lot of work to people there. If you want to make a pretty looking, my first visualization sort of style storybook, go for it. But like, if you're trying to communicate a point, again, just answer the questions people have. One point, like, what's happening here? Like, the reason why I'd push for bar charts or anything as opposed to these guys is we all have some common skills that are derived from the fact that we used to walk the land, with crossbows killing each other looking for food, right? And there's a reason why, like, if, like, an 8-foot guy, a 6-foot guy, and a 3-foot guy approach you and you have to fight one of them, everyone knows straight away they're going to go for the little guy unless he's got a weapon, right? But more than that, like, if you have two friends who are roughly the same height, you still know instinctively who's taller, right? And you know that because you're trained to know that. You can just tell. Like, even if it's only, it could only be like 2 or 3 centimeters, but like, which is like, say, that distance on a height of, say, 5-6 feet, you still spot it straight away because that's what you're trained to do. That's the reason we're all here and all our ancestors died. They got killed off because they couldn't tell these things, right? And it's, there's other things we're good at, like pattern detection. So as in, the reason, like, if you're looking through a forest and someone moves, you'll spot that. It's because that's the sort of stuff the eye is good at. We've never had to have a skill set that has relied on being able to tell the relative size and area of a ring. So that's why we don't have it. Right? It's as simple as that. That was breakdown of a category. Another question you'll often ask me, Sean, is a breakdown of a category over time. So say if you take someone like McDonald's, they might say, well, in 2010, we went on a campaign to try and get more elderly people eating our food, right, for whatever reason. So they might say, well, what age group did we have at the start of the year, and what age breakdown we have at the end of the year, which, you know, you might show as a bar chart at the start and a bar chart at the end. But if you want to try and show the trend as to how it changed during the year, what people will often go to is something like this, which is a stacked bar chart, right? So say, in this case, it might be like, where are all the sales coming from? And you might say, Ireland, UK, and America. And so if you add the three of them together, you get the total, obviously. Now, the problem with one of these sort of charts is that if I was to ask you, when was America at its prime? When did America do its best? You're going to sort of say July, because, again, instinctively, that's the primate eye coming out in you and just going, well, that's the high bit. But that's, like, not nearly... It's not the case, because that's not what this graph shows. We're showing you stuff that isn't there. Another thing you can do, by the way, if you want to make the yellow look even bigger, again, just put a bit of dimensions on it and you can skew it again. But let's look at the exact same data here, right? But I'm just going to draw them as three different lines. So here's where we were. Here's the exact same data, right? If you look at America, it's been on a constant increase. The UK has not changed at all during the entire time of the year. And Ireland had a big peak and then died away again. And you couldn't see that over here for some reason. It's like you might be able to see it if you knew exactly what you're looking for, but it's very hard to measure that the UK did or didn't change at any point during the year. If you wanted to spot that, you can move back to something that humans are good at, which is visual correlation and, you know, rolling your eye across as an axis. So you'll see the constant green line there. You're going to look at that, and at a glance, you'll be able to tell me the UK hasn't changed. Ireland's the cause of all our growth. And, you know, it looks like America's coming along well. And that's, again, because you're good at this sort of thing. If this is a software application, you can help things out, because they're, of course, interactive. You can do things like, when they hover on one thing, fade the other two away so you can actually focus on the trend. Or you can draw lines to connect them so they can really see the curve. There's plenty of ways to do it. An interesting point here. Why is it that this isn't good, right? Well, it's not good because it relies on your ability to measure the width of that. So why couldn't we see the UK stability? Well, it's because it's tricky to see the stability in width of the green bar as it moves around the place, which is the exact same skill, believe it or not, that you need when you're playing snooker. No joke. If you need to gauge a shot in snooker and you're wondering, will the white pass the pink to hit the black at the right angle, and will that black be able to go past those two reds and into the corner? That's the ability of measuring a chain. Will one thing of fixed width be able to move around this trajectory and end up in a certain place? Now, there's about 60 people in the world who make a living playing snooker. Everyone else is pretty much shit. So unless you're designing an infographic for a snooker player, you should think about what you're doing there. Okay. So I'm going to just talk to you about how you visualize things, because there's a couple of simple rules that will really help you as you do this. There's two things you need to visualize. Quantity, which is like the size of things, right, is one bigger than the other. And category is one different to the other. That's all you ever usually need to do. So if you need to visualize quantity, every 9 times out of 9, line length or something that involves length measurement will always work best. And that's the top left here, right? Anyone can tell me that the middle line there is longer than the other two, and the other two are roughly the same width, right? Or length. As a backup, you can use width, right? You can sort of say this one is thicker than that one, and you can usually tell that. It's probably the same thing that stops you getting into a fight with heavy guys, right? Color intensity will work as well. Color intensity, you've got, you know, you can't tell me how much smaller the first one is than the last one. But you can't tell me it is smaller factually, right? Relative size, which is down in the bottom left, this is the bubble plots, right? Again, people can guess roughly, like, I know that's this, but like they can't quantify it well. Counting it out, again, I've sort of shown you why these can be a bad idea. If it's a motion chart, and by emotion chart, I don't mean an emotion chart, like as in happy to sad, but no, if it's a motion chart, as in one that involves interactivity and movement, you can use the speed at which things move to make your point. For example, you can all tell me that like one of those is smaller than the other, or slower than the other. Therefore, you know, it got there quicker or whatever. It has higher speed. But generally speaking, if you need to show the relative size of things beside each other, whether it's sales, profits, marketing budget, customer happiness, percentages, whatever, that's the tools you have at your disposal, and that's roughly the order in which you can use them. If you need to show what's distinct, as in how many people from England, how many people from Russia, or what people were under 18, what people were over 25, you're into category territory. So with categories, you've got some stuff to play with. You've got line type, or you can even say form or texture or whatever, but it's basically like, can you make the shading or whatever you've chosen for this distinct to something else? So you have a straight line, a dotted line, a dashed line, a scribbled line. You can have things, or you can intersperse a line with rectangles or intersperse it with squares, that'll do as well. You've got different colors. So actually, not intensity here, but just factually different colors. Then you've got shapes, and you've got location. And for location, I mean, whereabouts in the diagram is it? Is it above the border, below the border? You can, you know, if you wanted to plot out country data, obviously you put stuff in different locations. So then that's why you can do things like if you wanted to show, you know, a map of the world and you wanted to highlight which areas are stronger, you can say, well, let's first of all use the map. That's our location base. And now how can we visualize the quantity in each? We can't use lines, or can we? If we can't use them, maybe we can use color intensity. You know, that's your option. So let's have a look at the time first. How am I doing for time? Anyone? I'm doing great. So let's say you've just taken over a hotel and you're handed the accounts and they're just a big wadge load of Excel sheets. And you kind of, what you want to work out is, should I keep running this hotel or not? Well, a good question is, are we making money? So making money is usually the difference between profit and loss. And the difference is, of course, a delta. So because of that, you want to be able to see what are our good months, what are our bad months, should be closed during the winter, like a few hotels do. Where does our money come from? You might also ask, what's our core business? So what areas does our money come from? So again, that's visualizing category. So you could use a histogram for that. And you basically break out, where is our money coming from? Well, it looks like rooms and weddings and bar. We could probably close the conference center. It's doing nothing. The business is doing nothing. Let's have a look at the cost of those versus the money they bring in. And again, if you want to look at the cost versus the money, that's going to be a delta. So you visualize that way. But that's how you're going to build up this querying workflow. How did the rooms sell? So what you see here is a bracket of the different prices that they sell at. So a King Suite sells anywhere between 100 and 175 sterling. If you want to make that data a bit richer, you can add in the average value or the median value, like what's the most frequently occurring value we have of that. And then you'll sort of see, right, well, some idiots are paying 175 quid for a King Suite. The reality is we're shipping on 100 quid. So, but like that data should be able to jump out at you. Once you know, in the querying sort of workflow, once you know what you're looking for, you then know the visualizations to do it. So then, how do we design a screen that that sort of supports this workflow? Well, that's when you get into an analyst view of a dashboard. So you might sort of have drop-downs for the different type of areas. So what type of revenue? Do you want to break it down by rooms? Do you want to break it down by what time period are you looking at? What type of guests are you looking at? With the idea being like you'd have drop-downs for each of the main variables you look at, and then you can redraw and regraph the things as you see fit. So that's how you sort of put some of this together. Oh, I see. So lastly, a bit about style. So styling these infographics is something that people, once they get something they're happy with, they tend to go, right, let's make this thing look awesome. And on that, like, it's worth pointing out that this is a car. It's a Mini Cooper. That's the dashboard of a car. This is a nuclear power station. This is a space shuttle, right? Those interfaces are designed for a car, a nuclear power station, and a space shuttle. This is none of those things. And this is more likely where your dashboard is going to be consumed. Okay? The point is, we're not always fighting for attention, and the people using our tools aren't always like drivers or astrophysicists. So let's quickly walk through like where people go wrong with this sort of stuff. So I've got a bit of a straw man of a horrible looking dashboard here, right? So we could say, right, for the sake of argument, let's say that there's nothing wrong with these visualizations except for the fact that they look shit, right? So why do they look shit? Well, this is where a guy called Edward Tufte comes in. And Tufte has three concepts that I'm going to quickly go through with you. One of them is chart junk. So chart junk is deemed as anything that doesn't change when the data changes. So that's every extra unnecessary grid line, every shadow, every unnecessary title, every gap, every, you know, shade. Basically, if you pull all the data off a dashboard and there's a lot of stuff left, you're in trouble. Which is why he has a thing called the data ink ratio. So what percentage of your ink shows data? So if you can imagine your screen was a blank page and you had to draw everything down, how often are you drawing stuff that's related to data versus how often are you drawing spurious, unnecessary crap? And the last point I'll make is the smallest effective difference. When you want to show the difference between two things, use the smallest effective difference, not the most dramatic thing possible, right? And the reason for that is because it makes it much easier to look at. It's the reason why certain colors go together and certain colors clash, because the contrast is just too much. So you'd be like, some people are tempted to use a color set like this for a chart or any, you know, a color palette like that. Problem is, those colors are kind of wildly at odds with each other, and that's useful if they needed to be. But like, if you wanted to make something just look pretty easy to look at, if you just were to take one color and just take varying shades of it, so there's less difference between them, but you can still visually spot the difference, you'll find it makes things a little bit quieter. That's the principle of the smallest effective difference. So going back to this yoke, what's unnecessary here are gradients, borders, backgrounds, shadows, grid lines, and colors. So what if we already start getting rid of them? So there goes the gradients, there goes a bit of that sort of stuff. Let's drop down. So we're now kind of removing all this. Remember, like, none of this stuff was necessary for the data in the first place. So we're now looking at a slightly cleaner version. I'll break away now to a guy called Ryan Singer, who has an interesting point. He was talking about HTML, but it just applies in general. It's kind of like a theory of linguistic relativity, which is the idea that how the language you have informs how you think. In HTML, there's no weak tag, but there is a strong tag. So as a result, you can get bigger and bolder and louder, but you can't get much quieter from where you start. So we need to remember to think about what's less important on the screen and quieten that stuff down first before you go make everything else loud. Because otherwise you end up in that sort of Spinal Tap situation where everything's louder than everything else. So if we were to quieten this down a bit, we're now getting somewhere. So now we can now look at adding in some necessary distinctions that we see fit, and we can bring in a little bit of color, and we'll sort of build up. And you can sort of see now, I can flesh this out further, but like, you can sort of see where if you consider we came from here to here, not by doing anything. All we're doing here is taking stuff away, right? That's the important thing here. This isn't design. This is just restraint. This is like having the maturity not to go for your fill gradient tool every second you get. So I'll quickly go through a couple of examples of dashboards we've worked in. That's going to be a sales dashboard. A lot of this stuff is slightly confidential, so I can't really explain it too much. This is an items report dashboard. This is a network analysis dashboard. That's another one showing breakdowns per country. Then these are in our work. This is a visualizations tool called Chartbeat. There's one called Reinvigorate. That's a web analytics tool. This one's called Omniture Web Metrics. That's Duck's board. These speed dials, by the way, only ever work if you have a max and a min. So a car can't go above like 200 kilometers an hour. The problem I always see is people have a sales dashboard with a speed dial for sales. And they're going, what happens if you oversell? And they're like, oh, we haven't really thought of that. You know, but I guess that's a good problem to have. That one's Gecko board. But anyway, you can see they're all using sort of similar principles. So I'll give you just a couple of quick closing points and I'll be out of here. A visualization has to say something. Don't produce stuff that basically like looks sexy but doesn't actually make a point. Don't like do the Jessica Simpson of dashboards. Like, another point, if you are working in software, is that these things evolve over time. You don't need to launch with like the best one possible. I've worked with startups who've always requested that they have what I call like the vanity dashboard, which is like they want this thing to look really, really awesome that helps them monitor traffic. And I'm like, well, let's wait till we get some traffic before we worry about that. But like, no. So you end up building with these sort of things where, like, you know, it's like, it's the most perfectly beautiful way to say you are in trouble, you know? So you start with the basics. So just total some numbers. And then when totaling numbers, don't cut it anymore. Then you can look at sort of adding in some small information like what's changing. Then over time, you can add yearly views, monthly views. I mean, adding a yearly view after a year is a good time to do it. Before then, it's just a bit pointless. You can add things like insights and actions. So this is how you can annotate a graph to make it clear what caused this growth or what, you know, why is it happening. And then things like projections. When you get into the Jeff Bezos mindset where you're thinking about the next 5 years, you can then start worrying about projections. But again, you evolve there. You don't start there. Other stuff you can get from these sort of things is like insights into engagement. So for example, if we were to show like, say if this is Facebook and we were to show photos uploaded by number of times they log in. And that was a scatter plot. So every one of those little gray bubbles represents a user. Then you'll sort of see, right, these guys in the top right are heavy users. These guys in the bottom left are probably just lurkers. They just come in to look at photos. We start to identify, right, if we wanted to charge a certain type of user a certain amount of money, here's who we could charge because they're obviously using us a lot. And then say if you had a free plan and you want to see how are people moving through the gears, you could use something like a variation of a Markov chain. So this is like, how do people use our app and how do they move through the gears? So if you're trying to test out a business model like freemium, where you have, like, say, a free plan where like 70% of your users aren't paying you any money, well, what you need to know is, are these guys ever going to pay me money? And if you see that 75% of those become inactive, you might realize, hang on, this whole giving stuff away for free isn't working out well. Maybe we should question it. Another thing you should learn to do with your infographics, especially if it's not coming out of software, if you're doing it for like a skill poster or if you're doing it for like a CEO presentation or whatever, is present an argument rather than just pure data, like as in make your point. So a guy called Don Norman, he kind of takes issue with this this idea of just clean data above all else. He says basically the world isn't filled with professional statisticians, like, so not everyone can actually join the dots in these things. Most of us would be happy enough to have a quick glance to get a summary. If that quick glance is made easier by seeing burning cars or whatever, then I say all the better. So an example would be if you wanted to show, like, say, French fry consumption over a year, you might sort of bar chart that out, but then you might say, right, well, how do we actually show it to be heavy or whatever? And you can use simple things like just take some graphic from the domain. And here you've basically, you're not sacrificing too much of the data, but you're still making your same point. And you can do that with plenty of things. If you wanted to show that we're consuming, we're burning too much oil, you can like splash oil all over your chart or whatever, like or show your bar charts drowning in oil or whatever. But like you can do all of that once you have the data right in the first place. Then you go and say, what's the domain? Let's take some tasteful graphics from the domain and drop them into our visualizations. Another point along this line is usability isn't everything. So it's not all about usability. Sometimes it's about making an interesting point. Right, and there's nothing wrong with that. So if you wanted to show how long the animals live, and you actually wanted to make it engaging, you could do that sort of thing, so you'll realize the giant turtles live for many years, 150 years or so. But again, it's about making things interesting. This is a massive infographic. But like by kind of sprucing it up a bit, they've made it visually enticing. But again, get your data right first. The last point I'll make is that you're not always designing for somebody who knows nothing. Sometimes you're designing for expert users. An example of that would be something like this, right? If there's any soccer fans in the audience, when I was presenting this at Mix, everyone was like, well, we don't understand soccer anyway. But this is a passing chart of Xavi Hernandez, the Barcelona player, in a game against Inter Milan. And at a glance, someone from the Opta group can tell you that he is a fantastic, phenomenal footballer, but only when he plays with Iniesta and I think it was probably Henri in that game and Alves. But like, at a glance, you can sort of see straight away who is this, how do we stop this guy from playing against him? Because that's what he's showing, right? Now, I don't expect anyone to understand that, except for if you make your career out of understanding footballers, this is a good way you should learn how to read one of these charts. Similar for this one. This is a comparison of two footballers. And again, the breakdown isn't there for everyone, but it's there for people who need to be able to read this stuff and digest it really quickly. Lastly, if you're interested to try any of this sort of stuff, I would say if you have to implement these sort of things, Google have a fantastic chart editor tool where you basically pick a chart that you want to do and it walks you through the process of creating the data. And then the way the charts work is really well, it's just an image that you source off their server and it just renders it straight away and you actually pass the data in the image URL. Another great tool is a tool called HiCharts and it's at HiCharts.com. It's a JavaScript library for rendering fantastic looking charts. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.